Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. This morning, we will continue on our month-long focus on women empowerment, working mothers, the balancing act of motherly love, and career. Joining me this morning is my special guest, Maya Behrens, a life coach from Santa Monica, California, who has also written a book titled Once Upon a Time, There Was You, Three Magic Secrets to Finding Real Self. Known as a wise fairy godmother, Maya is also a former founding director of Mars Venus Institute. She has trained over 500 professional therapists and corporate speakers worldwide based on the principles of John Gray's Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. In this hour, we will get first-hand information from Maya on what life coaching is all about and how it can help us achieve what we want through personal transformation. Good morning, Maya.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm very good, and you're very welcome.
Great, great. Well, let's get started here with, I just want to read something about life coaching and then get to some questions and answers from you. Life coaching is described by the International Coach Federation as a relationship that guides clients in a thought-provoking and creative process that inspires them to maximize their personal and professional potential. It is so popular that Life Coaching for Dummies book is also available. But life coaching, of course, is no laughing matter, as you know. Demands for a life coach has increased exponentially, and millions seek beyond traditional answers from beyond traditional sources of wisdom. For a busy mom, balancing children, family, relationships, and commitment on her time, a life coach represents an outside source of inspiration and guidance, a calming voice to help navigate through her life's clutter she faces when meeting everyone's needs except hers. Maya, what is the difference between going to a psychiatrist and going to a life coach?
Well, I'll tell you from the best of my experience, I've never been to a psychiatrist. I have been to a therapist a little bit, and I certainly have some views, but I don't, you know, so I'll tell you what I think. It tends to be true, I believe, that therapy tends to look at the past and help people understand it, so I think. I mean, but it's more about the past. Life coaching is more, from my perspective, about how to live your life differently now and in the future. The crossover is, there's a lot of crossover, and I don't know how one defines it exactly where the boundary is, but I, as a personally, as a coach, have had clients who are in therapy at the same time. And it's not something that we discuss a lot of. I totally support them. I never feel like it's a conflict in any way. So that's not a great definitive answer, but it's the best I can.
Well, what is the difference between the roles they play in one's life? I mean, you mentioned just now, which is quite interesting, you have someone that you have worked with that engages you as his or her life's coach, and then at the same time, he or she is also attending, you know, the, I guess, the mainstream, more formal way of, sources of help. How does that, what's the difference?
As I said, I can't really speak much on that, but I can say what the question you asked me as pertaining to the role that life coaching plays in one's life, that I can speak to. And that is, well, the experience of having a life coach myself, for me, what it was helping me move forward past things that were blocking me. And they may have, and actually at the time when I'm thinking about it, I kind of had unfinished business with my past, with my parents, and so I got a little bit more refocused towards a different perspective. is what I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
When I work with clients, and let's take a mom, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Most often, and it's not like I've had 30,000 clients, but
yes.
memorable people often are clients, are parents, mothers of adult children. And there's a unique thing that happens. You know, mothers of little children, when we were mothers of little children, there's always a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the challenge of not taking care of yourself, not having the time, not seeing it as important. When you grow older and your kids go off, the challenge of doing that for yourself is still there. And that's probably the part, and also how to deal appropriately with your adult children. You know, where do you stop being mommy and where do you start being mom?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is it appropriate for you to contribute into their life, and where is it appropriate for them to just be on their own and do their thing? So a lot of that, because since I have four children and they are adults and I've been through a lot and they are all, I would say, living their lives quite happily, I have a lot of experience in that. So that's, I guess a core important thing about when I work with people is most of the time it's something that I've gone through in my life, and therefore I can help them.
Mm-hmm.
I tend not, that, for example, which is why I probably don't work too much ever with people in corporate life, because I'm not familiar with corporate life. I've never worked there. So, you know.
This is interesting because you mentioned that, in your style of coaching, it's a little bit different than the International Coach Federation, what they define as coaching. For example, I mean, they have a distinct service that differs greatly where, from a therapy standpoint of your consulting, mentoring, training program, and you, on the other hand, you feel that some of these services must be incorporated into helping the client where you get a little bit more personal. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yes, I definitely can, and I'm making me laugh because that's probably why I'm not a member of ICF anymore. And I have nothing against them, but I don't particularly see the world in the way that they necessarily see it. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I'm 66 years old. I've been in the personal and spiritual growth perspective industry, my own journey, for at least 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have developed a high sense of awareness and really a lot of life experience and wisdom about what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had some really phenomenal teachers, including John Gray, I know an awful lot about how to do it and what to do. What do it is how to have your life the way you want it to be, and how to see what's holding you back. So to me, it seems I would be irresponsible if all I did was quote-unquote, coach the client with answers that they can readily share in my experience. They can do with it as they want, but I would not withhold it. So I do tell clients when I'm sort of, we're interviewing each other before we start a coaching relationship, that I will give opinions. They can throw it away, but it is kind of a coach slash mentor in many ways, at least from my understanding what those two things are.
And the fact that you use all these techniques, which is a little bit different, and which is, I guess, over the years you have sort of custom-tailored it to your style, and you work mostly with women. Why is that?
That continues to be a question. I love men. I love my husband, and I have two sons who are men, and I love them, and it isn't about that. It's that I don't have their experience, and I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The other, they operate most of the time Now I'm being very general, so don't get insulted, anybody. But we do tend, men and women do tend to operate differently in the world, see the world differently. We actually have different amounts of connective tissue in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
So men can sort of generally stay in a non-emotional place, and it's harder for them to go to an emotional place. Women tend to have both things happening at the same time. So we see the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, I don't think that I benefit them as much as if they were with a man.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there are times, and I have had this experience too, where it's actually perfect for them to have a woman because they've had issues with women, and having a woman that they talk to is probably on some level extremely beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
But I do tend to work with women because we relate very well in experience also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been a female my whole life, so
mm-hmm.
I kind of understand it.
I understand. I mean, there's a greater connection there, obviously, and that you can relate because of your style in terms of, hey,
exactly.
I've been there, I've done that,
exactly.
I've experienced through this, so this is how I resolve it, and perhaps,
exactly.
you know, this is something you can apply to yourself based on your upper and lower limits, because each and every one of us have our own upper and lower limits, and
well,
we have to operate well within that.
I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we do, but I don't think. From my perspective,
mm-hmm.
most people that I notice, women.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to speak about men for now.
Mm-hmm.
But when I most women that I run across are not living their highest potential because they have not learned the most important thing, which is to love and trust themselves.
That's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if they do, and if by some miracle they can do that pretty darn fast,
mm-hmm.
then let's say they do live the rest of their life as their highest potential. For me,
mm-hmm.
so far, I will say that it's an increasing experience all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I am very aware of my own process. I do
mm-hmm.
see the small ways which I kind of withhold certain kinds of success for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a judgment here or a little whip
mm-hmm.
that comes out over there.
Right.
You know, old behavior.
Right. Well, what I mean is by upper and lower limits is that we all have what we feel comfortable and not comfortable doing. And so what happens is that some of us can help ourselves on our own in stretching this zone, the comfort zone. And some of us need life coaches like you to come in and
I agree.
Hey, stretch it a little bit more.
I agree.
And that's what I meant.
That's right. Okay, so thanks for clarifying. And what I
yeah.
would say is that that kind of support, and maybe most particularly for women, probably needs to occur, which does not mean that everybody needs a life coach. It's a great thing to experience, but it's
right.
not that. You know, I have friends who do that. I fortunately have a husband who
mm-hmm.
does that too. So I just think there is the human need for support, and I think it is on the...
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. What percentage of moms constitute your client base?
Moms?
Mm-hmm.
Do
you
I were guess, I mean, I'd
mm-hmm.
have to guess.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 70 or 80%, I would
mm-hmm.
say.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
say,
some of these women now.
Or ones that want to be moms. I mean,
right.
I have
right.
a 30-year-old client. I have a couple of clients in their early 30s who
mm-hmm.
want to be moms. They see themselves as moms.
Right.
They're just not there yet.
Right. And, of course, I mean, it may not be a mom-related issue.
That's
it
right.
could be, you know, because it's about a women empowerment, but in the course of living their life, that's a component of it. And
it is. And I have a kind of observing ability that just sort of I naturally
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
notice what's going on with people. And one of the things that I have noticed, and I've noticed it over many years, is not always, but frequently, women who haven't had children
mm-hmm.
sometimes, or haven't like made some children important in their lives, seem to be a little bit different than those who have had children. And I'm not exactly sure. And all that I may be seeing is just that they are people who really know that having children is not what they want to do. And it's not something that I completely understand, because in all my memory, I always remember thinking and seeing myself as having kids. And now I have four.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that you talk about that there's a distinction within women themselves, those who have had children versus those who never had children, and those who want to have children. You have actually three different groups here. I know you mentioned
about
two.
You even have a fourth one, and you have one that never had children, may know that they don't want them,
right,
but involve themselves, for example, in their friends' children or in their nieces and nephews.
That's correct. That's correct.
So that they have that, they still
have part-time experience, so to speak.
Exactly. But they make themselves important and valuable in the childhood.
Right, right. But and what's interesting about this is last month my topic was why we celebrate Mother's Day, and one of the week was devoted to recognizing the forgotten moms, the real Mr. Mom. And what I gather from this couple of I had a couple of guests on the show, and it was a tremendous experience that they went through being a mom.
Uh-huh.
And they certainly got it, so to speak, understanding, besides, you know, I mean, apart from actually not truly experiencing the pregnancy period and the labor pains and whatnot, but they understood the bonding that which is totally unique when you're there kind of 24/7, and over the years it just grew. And then on the other hand,
now I have two sons who have babies, and my oldest son, their baby is 10 months old, and they have literally, both parents have been with him pretty much all day, all night. He sleeps with them. My son works at home. My daughter-in-law works at home. And actually, she's quit working. She's just taking care of the baby. And my son, I was with them at Christmas, and he was in the dining room at my stepdaughter's house, and the baby was in the living room. And he said, "I have to go see Zev. I miss him. I'm used to the same room with him all day."
Yeah, yeah.
And my younger son does work, and the baby does get taken care of, but he is as much a parent as the mom is.
Right. I've got a little statistic right here that I want to share with you. In a recent February 2009 study by the International Coach Federation states that the top three motivations for hiring a coach are as follows. The first one is for self-esteem, self-confidence, which is for about 41%. The second one is about work and life balance, issues about working and balancing it with life. And the third is the career opportunities. How do these numbers or ranking as a motivating factor line up with the concerns voiced by your clients?
Well, I would say that I almost always work with the self-esteem, self-confident group. And the life balance and career change and all that frequently are results of that. Of the change, the transformation. You use the word transformation. I like it a lot, that word. Watching people go, for example, right now I have a client who spent, well, actually now I'm kind of more almost exactly mentor. She's retired from 49 years of working in the corporate or academic world, and she is in the process of becoming a life coach. And this is a very gigantic change for her, particularly because of her background. And so it's actually great to watch her. And she sort of prepared, because while we've been coaching, she also became a minister. And then another woman I have as a client who's in her mid-50s who's got always pretty much has always had a corporate background, never been doing things that she really loves, is foraging, and we don't even know exactly what it's going to look like, but she's going in the same direction, not necessarily life coach, but I think possibly celebrant, which means people who help you create an event out of, let's say, you know, maybe a wedding, but it could also be out of retirement or lots of things, you know, changes in your life and sort of make them special. I mean, I just finished with a client who's young and going from, I mean, becoming a life coach, and she's just sort of zipping along.
Let me ask you this now, but you mentioned twice about you've worked with other women that who wants to be a life coach. What does it take to be a life coach?
Well, that's very interesting if you ask the ICF, and if you ask me, you're definitely different answers. Now,
yes.
Here's an interesting thing I do want to say. I mean, I'm kind of kidding, but I'm not.
Yeah.
ICF, International Coach Federation, and there are other organizations like it. They are self-appointed industries, organizations that have decided that they are the association for coaching. There is no government decision about any of this, and they've tried to make it so and can't. So far, and I personally don't think it'll ever happen. As far as my relationship with people and when we meet to talk about the possibility of coaching, no one in all the years that I've been doing this has ever asked me whether I'm a member or certified or any of those things. So my recommendation is for people when you are looking for a coach, speak to at least three people. And now everybody has a website. You can read about them. You can tell an awful lot from the website. I have a client right now who told me that she looked at, she said thousands, but I doubt if it was thousands, although knowing her, it could be. She looked at many, 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 many coaching websites, not because of looking for a coach for herself, but because of the business she's creating and wanted to see what's out there. And she said, this is her quote, that my website is the only website she saw that had any soul. And I know what she means by that, and it is, by the way, all about lifecoaching.com, is because you can meet me when you're there. I write the way I speak. I write about all kinds of things. I'm not afraid to, as you can tell, give my thoughts and opinions. And people feel they know me before they even talk to me. So I will get to the answer. You wanted to know what I think constitutes the basis for becoming a life coach. In my opinion, people who have experienced succeeding in an area in their life, overcoming whatever it is they had to overcome, can help someone else do that and can charge them. Depending on the individual, some people feel they need to go to a life coach school, which I did, and it was a good experience. It didn't teach me how to be a coach, really, but it did give me a certain sense of what coaching could be like. I think the best way for someone to become a life coach is to have a good life coach, because you just learn so much in the experience of it. So,
no, that's interesting, because I want to add to that is that what's the more I hear you talk, and I think this is the difference. I think that I've been to situations where I know in my other corporate world business, when I was chief operating officer of my company, the CEO at one time engaged a corporation to come in and talk to the employees and everything else. It's about coaching. But I noticed that the difference, I think, there is a fine line. I think that there's room for both. But there's a sort of a detachment
that
in terms
true.
Of
that
because it's like I kind of relate it to whereby, well, I'm coming across as I'm a learned person. I know what you need. So let me give you all this. But
that's
then again, it's sort of like from the field of academia, I guess, you know, the learning experience.
Exactly.
And then the flip side, you have someone perhaps like you, and maybe in some cases like me, that that people can talk to and relate, connect, because they can see it's real life, real situation, that, hey, you know, if he can do it, I can do it, because he was there.
That's right, and that is, I would say that's part of what I offer, but I also have another gift that is particular to me, although I'm pretty sure that it's fairly high in some form of it for a good deal of coaches, if not most. And that is that I have an intuitive, let's say intuitive, empathic, sometimes almost psychic ability to kind of feel. I feel my way around the world. It's my way of sort of being, and I can feel quite often the blocks, and I can hear behind the words often when people are speaking.
Right.
And what I mean, I kid around about this. This is what people pay me for.
Right.
They want
right.
to hear what it is that I hear,
mm-hmm.
because quite often it's almost like how you have something on the edge of your tongue and you just can't quite get it out, and I get to be a mirror showing it to them.
Right, sure. Well, I mean, we go through, what it is that we go through our own personal denial and
well, right,
because
exactly.
of the fear.
And,
it's the self-inflicted anxiety.
But they want to come out. You know,
correct.
They want to
yes.
come out from
yes.
behind it. So
right.
it's really helpful if someone can, if they're willing and open, which they are, or they wouldn't call, but they also wouldn't pay me. and they know that I'm not coming, and I never am, from a place of making them wrong. My job, as I see it, I mean, it almost feels like a sort of mission, and that is to uphold people in the light that I understand we as human beings are, which is really quite unique and special. I mean, I have a very positive view of the human race, which is why I don't watch the news.
I understand.
Because that can undermine my positive view of the human race.
Well, and you're approaching it from a spiritual standpoint of view also.
So.
I think very, very, very spiritual approach in your coaching style.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, of all the moms you have worked with, what has been the strongest recurring theme which, when it comes to issues of empowerment? And I guess this will be women also, issues of empowerment.
Issues of empowerment, they kind of come from, that's an interesting question, because they kind of come from a kind of learned mothering that we've watched. And we've experienced. So our children are learning from us all the time, as we did from our parents, and mostly unconsciously. So when all us girls see their mothers almost not existing as people, not taking care of their own needs, not feeling allowed to almost, and putting themselves in situations where they very, very far from the time. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I had an interruption there. Did you
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
Anyway, so it's like I have had to reteach myself about taking care of myself and what that means. And I teach them. So the way it shows up quite often, particularly with women who have adult children, having good boundaries with their children. Feeling that, you know, so in other words, they start verging on enabling them.
Yeah.
You know, they can't quite let go of the mommy role. And then find that they don't even know, they know they're not satisfied and fulfilled in the work they're doing or in the way their life is, but they don't know where to go because they've never spent any time looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
I do think many younger women, and this could just be because I live in L.A., and I do have a lot of professional young women, and even in the entertainment industry, although not necessarily just that, but they're very sort of self-actualized and and in relationships and moms. So they're kind of a different version. But, you know, my generation and a lot of women in my generation and later have not been brought up that way.
What are the three most important questions a mom can ask in order to change her life?
The three most important questions a mom can ask who?
To ask herself.
Oh, to ask herself.
Yeah.
Okay.
In order to change her life.
Okay. Well, I don't know that I can come up with three questions, but it's certainly, here's what they need to be looking for.
Yes.
Within themselves.
Yes.
What they need to be looking for within themselves are those little, how many times they sort of amp themselves up with energy that they don't really have to do one more thing for a child or a partner that isn't absolutely necessary. And I'm not saying neglect your children or family in any way, but people tend to, I'll give you a concrete example. Many people feel they absolutely have to provide a college education for their child. I was a single mother, and that was not going to happen. What I did was promise that I would support them towards their future in whatever way that I could without harming myself. I mean, I probably didn't say it this way, but the daughter, I do have only one, well, I have a daughter that has her bachelor's degree and master's degree. My husband and I paid for as much of that as we could. And she paid for the rest. She's still paying for some of it. She still has student loans that she's paying, and she's 35. So the thing is that I had to look at how much was I willing to do and not have any life myself to give her, for example, what she had was graduate school in England. I loved that she wanted to do that, but I'm not wealthy. So I did what I could.
And what I understand right here, what I'm hearing is this. You can't give everything, and then there's a very fine line of what sacrifice is all about. Because when you hurt, then you're the source of the love and the energy that actually sustain everything. So you have to keep a balance here. And you cannot be selfish on the hand, it's just me. You do have that obligation or, you know, that responsibility, not necessarily obligation, because you want to see that that child, that that life succeed. But at the same time, in the course of doing this balancing act, and it comes back again to what we talk about, the balancing act here, where in all actuality, everyone involved in this equation succeeded because the child obviously know that mom and dad have given everything they can within their perimeters of, again, the upper and lower limits here I'm talking about, where, you know, you don't
not
want to be wobbling.
There's also, I'm sorry for stepping in, but there's another part to it. She, and this is pretty true of my daughter, she's, because unconsciously she's watched me learn how to take care of my needs. She does a pretty good job.
Precisely.
Of taking care of her own. So she's got a good role model.
Oh, definitely. Well, that is a.
I can give you a. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's to me what I'm relating to, where it's real life, real situation. That's a lesson learned, not from a textbook. Lesson learned from real life.
You know who actually helped me with that? When I met John Gray back in 1982, before he was famous, and I got very involved with his, he was married to Barbara DeAngelis, I got very involved in their workshop program, et cetera, learning a lot and supporting them, and I was going out a fair amount at night. I was a single mom, and I talked to John about feeling, you know, I feel so torn because mm-hmm. he feels like I should be home with the kids and feels mm-hmm. like I should mm-hmm. be here. And he said, you know, here's the thing with single children of single mothers. If you don't take care of your own needs, your children are going to feel responsible for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they need you to be responsible for you. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I got it. All right.
Right.
I needed to make these changes myself because I had a very unhealthy background and needed to learn mm-hmm. how to live in a healthier manner for my sake and for their sake.
That's correct. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
So I did. And I couldn't, but, you know, I only am one person, so they were left more than felt totally mm-hmm. comfortable to me.
Mm-hmm. And the way you look at it, it's not so much they were left by themselves because they go through a learning experience itself, because sometimes this is the quite the opposite, because a lot of times people would say it's the quantity of time spent, and it's true, but then sometimes it's the quality of time spent, because you could be spending tons of time.
Yes.
I used to tell my mom when I was growing up, it's so funny because I grew up in a culture whereby, okay, you got, you know, I remember my mom vividly telling me, look, I provide you all the tools, blah, 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 and if you don't do well in school, and it's very, very competitive in Asia, and I happen to have a cousin who was the same age as I am. And so my aunt would come over to the house, and my aunt would tell my mom, you know, my son, when he comes home from school, he's hit the books all the way to X amount of time and just continuously do that. And if he doesn't make it, it's too bad. And so whereas here, Johnny gets home, eat lunch, and he's out the door enjoying life. And so my mom would tell me, says, you know, you got to be doing something different here. Your lifestyle is kind of like, you know, toxic, so to speak. And you need to sit here from 3 to 5 and read your books. And I would tell my mom, I said, you know, well, you want me to just open the books and just sort of like give you the perception that I'm actually reading while I'm daydreaming? Or you want me, like, when the time comes, I need to really sit down and hunker down, so to speak, and I can do it. And needless to say, that's my personality. You know, when I need to get it done, I get it done. So to me, to the exception, I'm not saying this is the norm, or, you know, it is what it is in a sense, but to some, it's the quality that counts, not the quantity.
Well, that is true. And you also brought up another thing. I have 4 children, and
mm-hmm.
my children, when I left, when I would be gone, let's say, from 7 to 9:30 or something, or 7:30 mm-hmm. to 9:30, they were in their own community. They weren't babies. You know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have – I mean, the oldest one was, like, 16. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
at that, let's just say, at that time. They
mm-hmm.
learned something about getting along with each other.
Right.
And being somewhat independent. And my children today are
mm-hmm.
34 to 42, and – they are very close.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They all say they love each other to each other. I hear them when they're on the phone before
mm-hmm.
they hang up. They say, love you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, if we have one that lives out of town, everybody mm-hmm. will make their life work so that we see them as much as possible
mm-hmm.
when they come.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's actually beautiful, and I
mm-hmm.
feel really proud, whatever
mm-hmm.
I contributed to that. Because
mm-hmm.
so many people lose track of their siblings and don't care.
Precisely,
and don't want
yeah.
to and don't like them. And mine. And I said this recently to one of the kids, and they said it's not that we never fight
mm-hmm.
or we always get along, but it is that we always forgive each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I see. They do. They get mad
right.
at each other. They complain to me about one, blah, blah, blah. And then I see. They always forgive each other.
Right, right.
So that's beautiful.
Well, what you're experiencing right now is what you guys actually had planned consciously or subconsciously.
That is true.
10, 15 years ago.
That is true. And maybe
yeah.
possibly lifetimes before.
Precisely. And so what's going to happen, say, 10, 15 years from now is what
yeah.
you guys are doing right now.
Right.
We are a product of who we are right now.
That
it's not
right.
who we are right now. In all actuality, we are a reflection of what we were back then.
That's right. And there's your reason right there to get
mm-hmm.
support in going forward and anything that anybody feels is bothering them, stopping them. You know, I had a very interesting, intuitively guided experience mm-hmm. with Twitter. And is that how you and I met, through Twitter?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I don't know, understand this stuff, but, you know, I'm doing it because people say do it.
Yes.
Well, what ended up happening is, for some reason, I got this idea, because this is kind of where I work, to ask mm-hmm. this question, an automatic question that comes when somebody follows me, if you know what social network
is, yes.
mm-hmm. what that means. And that is, what is blocking your spiritual or personal growth? You can't mm-hmm. believe how many people respond to me. So mm-hmm. this is really what it's about. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. what it's about. And now I've started on my website.
Mm-hmm.
It will go live probably tomorrow, today or tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I have a forum
mm-hmm.
for these kinds of topics. But mm-hmm. it's like the whole part of this is like Facebook with personal growth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I can comment, we can comment on each other's, and there's assignments, and it all doesn't cost anything.
Right.
And so it's like sort of a self-coaching program. My son, mm-hmm. when I told my son about it, he said it's like face up to it book.
No, I mean, but you do, because when often the time, and this is, I mentioned it in my book, and with regards to often the time when we are preoccupied with an issue, we tend to have tunnel vision. So right. by putting it out there, we are able to get someone else's perspective. And it's not a personal, when they give a personal, recommendation in this case, or whatever you want to call it, it's not a personal recommendation of you as much as the situation, because you analyze the situation. You can only solve situations. You can't solve people.
That's,
you can lead people,
right.
but you can't that's solve that's them. Right.
No,
they have to
no,
solve they, themselves.
I mean, someone wrote on the, for example, someone wrote on the, on this part of the site, a
mm-hmm.
woman wrote, who I don't know, but we've been communicating a bit by email.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote that she has all these physical ailments
mm-hmm.
and that her soul knows that forever and ever she's going to have these issues with her neck
mm-hmm.
or something like that from her accident.
Right.
So I know what that feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Just so happens I have an experience of that. So I wrote a comment because I want to open a door for her if she wants it. And I wrote the comment was, and I made it private, nobody else can see it except
sure.
her, that if she ever wants to hear the story of my whiplash, I'd be happy to share it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I had a whiplash that showed up on an X-ray. I used to get faintingly horrifying, really
mm-hmm.
bad headaches and neck spasms. And the interesting thing is, through the whole saga, that was 18, at
mm-hmm.
37 when I left my ex-husband,
mm-hmm.
I had an amazing drop in all that happening.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the previous year I had gone to an orthopedist who told me I either needed surgery or
mm-hmm.
A cortisone shot and that it would get worse. Well,
mm-hmm.
I'm here to tell you I'm 66. I never get a headache ever in
mm-hmm.
my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my neck doesn't spasm.
You're just clearing some negative energy.
And I didn't buy into the story that it's never going to go away.
Right.
I know there are some things that don't go away.
Right.
But I didn't buy that story.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, I mean, I'm starting to do yoga, and I really love it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not. So I help people with their beliefs. See, this is the
right.
thing that happens is, so you have an emotional experience when you're a child. You don't get the red dress you want, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your parents are lovely and fabulous, but they can't give you everything, and it's not necessarily appropriate and all that. But here you are, a little child. You have a feeling about that. It kind
mm-hmm.
of gets stuck someplace
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
your mother says, don't cry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we like to see you smile. And somewhere inside, you make some kind of decision. And it becomes a belief about the way the world is.
Right.
And, so
and it's also a fear, though. It's
well,
also
yeah,
a fear.
Yeah, it could be fear. So
yeah, isn't,
the whole, your whole mm-hmm. entire life, you live out this stuff,
mm-hmm.
which, with the help of awareness, whether mm-hmm. it's awareness gained with a life coach, awareness gained on your own, awareness gained with therapy or whatever, those things can be changed.
Well, let me answer this. How do you help a mom overcome fear? Because I think that's where the boundaries, the superficial boundaries has been set based on subconsciously living your life. So how do you help mom overcome fear?
I teach people to start paying attention to their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's inside them, and I can't go in there.
Right.
And just talking about it on the outside is only giving information. It doesn't change mm-hmm. anything on the inside. So I suggest to them that they start paying attention to their thoughts. I suggest when they start being able to do that, which is not that hard to do,
mm-hmm.
Then I suggest to them to feel in their body what happens when they have that thought, if they can, and to start talking to themselves to go in a direction that makes sense, which is not. For example, I grew up feeling like there was something wrong with the way I looked. And there's a whole mm-hmm. lot of reasons why, but that's just what it ended up being.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've had to do a tremendous amount of work, and one of the things I have to do is say what's sensible. I mean, I look perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with my body.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing
mm-hmm.
wrong with my face.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, a lot of people think I'm quite attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And now, after all the work I've done
mm-hmm.
and the parents I've forgiven and all this other work that I've done, a lot of inner work, I look in the mirror just about any time and think mm-hmm. I look great. And, you know, it's not that I don't see the 66-year-oldness of myself. I do.
Yeah.
But it's my view of myself has completely changed. So mm-hmm. I'm very aware of when people are doing that and how they are doing it to themselves. So fear comes, unless there's something actually to fear,
mm-hmm.
you know, which can happen. But it's mostly self-induced.
Right. Well, let me ask you this now. What kind of resistance do mom typically experience when they make a change? But, you know, during coaching, what is the greatest resistance that they gave you during coaching?
The greatest resistance that people give mm-hmm. is to do the emotional work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't sit and do it with them. I'm not a therapist. Mm-hmm. I chose not to become a therapist because it's not what I enjoy, and that's
mm-hmm.
not my gift.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have tools, and I don't
mm-hmm.
care what tools they use. They don't have to be mine.
Mm-hmm.
They're not mine anyway. Most of the one big tool that I think is fabulous myself, I learned from John Gray and Barbara DeAngelis.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter what tools. The point is you have to get rid of the old stuck
mm-hmm.
emotions inside,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that's where people resist.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
they oftentimes actually leave coaching,
right?
Because they don't want to.
Well, change is never easy, though.
Well,
you know,
that's
it's always very difficult.
So they're just not ready. I'm not saying they
yeah.
never will, but
right.
you know, I mean, and actually, this is a story of a man client that I've had who I love.
Mm-hmm.
He's been back 3 times to my coaching. The last time I actually told him to go find another coach, and it's not because I don't love him. It's because he comes back always with the same situation, which
mm-hmm.
is issues around money.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he needs to forgive his father for controlling
mm-hmm.
him with money.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of knows it, but then the last time I asked him, do you believe what I say when I tell you this stuff? And he said, well, I take it with a grain of salt. I said, mm-hmm. oh, my, you definitely need a new coach. I mean, the thing is I only have what I know and have experienced and can teach.
Right.
Or otherwise, I'm just a paid friend. I don't
right.
need somebody to pay me to be their friend.
Right, right.
So
well, I mean,
people's biggest resistance is if
mm-hmm.
they're going to show up with a lot of resistance.
Well, that's true. I mean, are you willing to kind of let go? Because I talk about, and this is the irony of it, because my mom, you know, you've read my book, and I have so many different moms, 9 moms, and one of the things that I've learned from them is the essence of making a change. And sort of in a nutshell, it's basically, I remember one of my moms telling me, my sanguine Savannah mom, she said that you have to look at it this way. What the caterpillar refers to as the end of the world, the butterfly calls it as the beginning of a beautiful life.
Exactly.
And so it was quite interesting.
That's right. And the interesting thing about that, a client recently pointed out to me, which I love because from something she was reading, is that change the focus, and you just said it, the focus is usually on what's going to be new. But what you got to realize is that that beautiful butterfly had to change, had to leave behind the caterpillarness of itself.
Right.
And we have to change behavior, usually, and thinking always to have the change that we want. It's largely not magic, although sometimes it does feel that way, and I've had that experience, and that's why... I mean, you know, I'm sort of taken with the wise fairy godmother. She's in my book because I had one. And I do kind of think that many of the changes that have happened in my life, although I can tell you how I did it, they feel magical because the perspective changed so dramatically.
That's true. That's very, very true. I understand where you're coming from. But these are, again, and it comes back to the idea of, I think whether it's a life from a life coach perspective or the traditional way of, I guess, seeing a therapist or a psychiatrist, a psychologist, it's coming back to, are we addressing the core of the issue? I think whether a mom or just a regular human being, we all have the core, and then we have the symptoms. If we take care of the core, we realign the core to direct energy correctly, then we're able to enjoy all the wonderful things that life has got to offer. Let me answer this. Now, if someone wants to get in touch with you, if she's interested in having you as a coach, how can she do that?
Well, my contact information is on my website, and my website is allaboutlifecoaching.com. And actually, I want to say something about your book because it's beautiful. First of all, it's physically absolutely beautiful. It's just a stunning book.
Thank you.
It makes you want to, like, leave it out so people will see it. And the wonderful thing, Johnny, is that as a man, you appreciate this whole momming that you got instead of, oftentimes I've noticed that men can get into the perspective of don't tell me what to do. And instead taking it from the perspective of honoring the gifts that your mother, that all these moms gave you. And I love it. It's really, it's a gift to men too.
Thank you. Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, and these women came into my life for a reason, and of course, as the book said, you know, I'm adopted at birth, and I went through this entire journey of coming to the United States and meeting all these wonderful women, and how over the years I've opened myself up to allow them to mother me in the sense that, you know, they became my team of counsel. They're always looking out for my best interests. And the things that I look back, what I've learned from it is that, you know, people ask me, you know, what have you learned? And I say, well, respect the past because it is a classroom for lessons learned. Be prepared for the future because it is my destiny. And all this live in the now because every moment is a memorable experience. And it's something that's very, very dear because my mom have always told me a long time ago that this is my Malaysian mom, and she said, you know, no matter how much wealth you have accumulated, how much, you know, physical things you have accumulated, I would have always tasted more salt of life than you will. And that's living wisdom.
That is true. And I want to say, darn, I hate this. I have this little forgetful thing. Okay, forget it. I don't know what it was, but it was
But you know, but I enjoy this, and I enjoy the fact that and people ask me, I mean, how, and I feel empowered in the sense that I do want to make a positive difference in people's lives by sharing them with them my experiences and the things that I've got the wisdom from all these wonderful women, because they have so much to offer.
Well, I remembered what it was, and it's actually very, I think that maybe it's not any kind of an accident that you and I met, because my latest grandchild that I was talking about is a five-month-old little boy who my son and daughter-in-law are foster parents of. They got him into their home when he was 2 days old. We all got to hold him when he was 2 days old, and he's about 5.5 months now, and we believe he will be part of our life forever. It's still not final, but he is getting so much. It's so sweet. My son, now that we have all this technology, my son, about three times a week with his iPhone, takes a picture of Jonathan before they go off for the day.
Yeah,
so today
yeah.
we saw him sitting. And I think he's almost sitting by himself. But he is going to have the experience that you've had. And I hope that we can teach him the perspective that you've gained, which is that it's you've had a blessing by being with all these women and all these families by extension. Instead of oftentimes people who are adopted feel like they've missed something and they get stuck in that.
Right. Well, you can, again, and one of the things that, that I talk about also in the book is you have, and from one of my moms, ironically, you know, I mean, you have to look at the past, you know, refer to the past as a reference, never a guide, because if it's a guide, then the view never changes. But if it's a reference, then you can see point A to point B. That way you can write what the future is going to be, and that's going to be very, very important, because you're not forgetting that there is a past.
That's
it is a past.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
Good. That's a great way to look at it. That's
So it's very, very different. Well, Maya, we're coming close to the towards the end of the show, and for all of my guests that I have on this show, do you have a recipe for living that you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Yes. My recipe for living is to learn how to look at life as if it's a school. Then you don't get so bound up in the drama of it all. And you can actually learn for, as you said, you can use the past as a reference point for making a better future. So I think that it's one of my three magic secrets, the very first one.
Fantastic. That's certainly a great recipe for living for all of our listeners. And Maya, thank you so much for spending this hour on from My Mom's Kitchen Talk Radio Show with me this morning. I really, really appreciate that. You've been a wonderful guest, and the things that you covered. And I think, like you say, I think there's no accident. Sometimes in life we meet and we try to help one another. And I think this is one particular situation that I'm getting so much out of you. And it's wonderful. Please, for about 35 seconds or so, talk about a little bit about your book.
Okay, sure. It's a little beautiful little square book with a CD. The first 37 pages are a fairy tale, sort of, for adults. It's like a parable. It's illustrated, and there's a CD that with the recording of my daughter that's an actress reading the story, and it has to do with my own beginning my journey and you know, coming out of kind of a dark place and going forward with my kids and finding a wise fairy godmother whose name was Janet, and to whom the book is dedicated. And who taught me three magic secrets, which are that life is a school, my cup runneth over, and that is use a lot of gratitude in life to make changes. And the third one is friend indeed, to have support, people who indeed are good support for you, whatever they are, whether they be a life coach or a sponsor in a 12-step program or friends or a partner or at least if nothing else, yourself. But outside's mm-hmm. good to have, too.
Well,
so that's kind of what my book is. And then the rest of the book is a lot of tools and exercises to help you incorporate these perspectives and tools into your life.
Thank you so much, Maya. And to all listeners, thank you for tuning in this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Debbie Sibler, the Mojo Coach. She is the president of Lifestyles Fitness, Inc., and she's also an author of two books, The Life Fitness Program and From Mom to Wow. And if you need additional information, please go to my website from mymamaskitchentalkradio.com. Thank you again for being with me this morning. Have a great weekend. Maya, thank you.